Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, The Activities of the Prachetas, Text Number 6. Kashi Shuna Kanaka Varna Vibhu Shanena. Brajat Kapola Varano Vilasat Kirita Jataha. Ashtayudar Anucharar Munibi Surendrar. Asevito Garuda Kinara Kita Kirti. Kashishnuna Kanaka Varna Vibhushanena. Brajat Kapola Varano Vilasat Kirijita. Ashtayudar Anucharar Munibi Surendrar. Asevito Garuda Kinara Gita Kirti. Karnaka Varna Vibhushanena Prajat Kapola Varna Vilasa Kirtitaha Atayudar Anucharai Munibi Surendrar. Hase Vito Garu Kinar Agita Kirtida. Ladies. Kashi Shuna Kanaka Varna Vibhushena. Rajat Kapola Varana Vilasat Kiritaha. Ashtayudar Achunaran Vibhi Surendrar. Ase Vito Garuda Kinara Gita Kirti. Kashishnuna. Shining. Kanaka. Gold. Varna. Colored, Vibhushanena, with ornaments, Brajat, shining, Kapola, forehead, Varana, his face, Vilasat, dazzling, Kiritaha, his helmet, Ashta, eight, Ayudai, with weapons, Anucharai, by followers, Munibi, by great sages, Soraendrai, by demigods, Asevitaha, served. Garuda by Garuda. Kinara, inhabitant of the Kinara planet. Gita, sung. Kirti, his glories. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Lord's face was very beautiful, and His head was decorated with a shining helmet and golden ornaments. His helmet was dazzling and was very beautifully situated on His head. The Lord had 8 arms, which each held a particular weapon. The Lord was surrounded by demigods, great sages, and other associates. These were all engaged in His service. Garuda, the carrier of the Lord, glorified the Lord with Vedic hymns by flapping His wings. Garuda appeared to be an inhabitant of the planet known as Kinara Loka. Purport. Generally, the Vishnu form is manifested with 4 hands holding 4 objects. That is, a conch shell, disc, club, and lotus flower. However, here, Lord Vishnu is described as possessing 8 arms with 8 kinds of weapons. According to Viraraghava Acharya, the conch shell and lotus flower are also accepted as weapons. Since the Lord is the supreme controller, whatever is in His hand can be considered a weapon. 4 hands hold 4 kinds of weapons, and the extra 4 hands hold an arrow, bow, trident, and snake. Sri Viraraghava Acharya describes the 8 weapons as Sankhya, Chakra, Gada, Padma, Shringar, Sharanga, Shara, etc. A king is always accompanied by his ministers, secretaries, and commanders. And Lord Vishnu is also accompanied by his followers, the demigods, the great sages, saintly persons, and so on. He is never alone. Consequently, there is no question of the Lord's being impersonal. He is always Himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and His associates are also persons. From the description given in this verse, Garuda appears to belong to the Kinara planet. The inhabitants of the Kinara planet have the same features as Garuda. Their bodily features are like those of a human being, but they have wings. The word Gita Kirti indicates that the inhabitants of Kinara Loka are very expert in singing the glories of the Lord. In the Brahma Samhita is said, Jagat Ananda Koti Kotishva Shesha Vasudadi Vibhuti Bainam. In each and every universe there are different types of planets, and each planet has distinctive features. On the strength of this verse, we can understand that in Kinara Loka, the inhabitants can fly with their wings. There is also a planet known as Siddha Loka, where the inhabitants can fly even without wings. Thus, each and every planet has some distinctive facility. That is the beauty of the very creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Let's read the verse again. The Lord's face was very beautiful. His head was decorated with a shining helmet and golden ornaments. The helmet was dazzling, was very beautifully situated on His head. The Lord had 8 arms, which each held a particular weapon. The Lord was surrounded by demigods, great sages, and other associates. These were all engaged in His service. Garuda, the carrier of the Lord, glorified the Lord with Vedic hymns by flapping His wings. Garuda appeared to be an inhabitant of the planet known as Kinara Loka. Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vrcharane Nirvishe Shashnivadi Paskya Dhyade Sadharane. In this Padila verse, Prabhupada is stressing the fact that Krishna is a person. And that not only Krishna is a person, but even all his associates are also persons. Therefore, expertise in something is not simply a question of technological expertise, but actually expertise is expertise in relationships. In Vaikuntha, Krishna has a very opulent situation beyond our imaginations. Of course, there are no iPhones in Vaikuntha. There's no computers. There might not even be internet. Therefore, it's strange that anyone would want to go to Vaikuntha. What would you do there? All there is in Vaikuntha is spiritual parks and flowers and birds. There are airplanes, but they don't need any fuel to fly. And if you even go higher than that to Goloka Vrindavan, you don't even have an airplane there. All you have is forests and cows. And there are birds there. It's rather primitive. But there's good prasad. That's the only... That makes up for everything else. And luckily, there's no disease because there are no Ayurvedic doctors there. Otherwise, since the prasad is so nice, we'd actually get into a lot of trouble if we went there, unless we had a spiritual body. But there's no problem. You can eat as much prasadam as you want. And not only that, you don't have to eat prasadam in order to enjoy prasadam. You just have to remember eating prasadam. And every time you remember that glubdaman, it tastes better, even in your memory. But the basic relationship there is not everyone just sitting around eating. And after they eat, they go to sleep and dream about eating more. There, everyone is engaged in trying to please Krishna. But pleasing Krishna is not that Krishna needs everyone to work from 9 to 5. Make sure the factory is well stocked and producing. And that his products are selling, especially milk products. Trying to find new outlets in Vaikuntha. No, to please Krishna is not something extremely difficult. Simply by loving Krishna, just by the enthusiasm that the inhabitants of Vrindavan have, just to please Krishna in a very simple way, just by their love, Krishna is pleased. Prabhupada gives the example of a very wealthy person. He has so much money, but what can you give him? But if you give him a son or daughter, a little 5-cent piece of candy, and the child is pleased, then the father becomes pleased, because actually what pleases him is the fact that his child is pleased. So similarly, it's actually love that people are actually looking for. Of course, the way people show love in the material world may vary. People may be convinced that you love them if you give them large amounts of gifts of great value. Other people don't require that. They actually want some show of course, service. Without service, how can you say you love someone? Even in the spiritual world, when one doesn't apparently give any service, like the flowers, but they do give service. Everything gives service. Otherwise, they'd be useless if they didn't give any service. But the flowers there, they just smell good. And because they smell good, everyone's in ecstasy smelling the flowers. Therefore, that is their service. Just, and that smelling good is not that just they smell good, but that's their love. They smell even better every day as the love for Radha and Krishna and their devotees increases. So the love for everyone, including the flowers and the cows and the water and the trees and the birds, everyone's love increases also. And as their love increases, they help to augment the love between Radha and Krishna and all the devotees of Krishna. It's not like they're just kind of like there, and no one knows really why they're there, but they happen to be there, so might as well keep them there. Where else can you put them anyhow? But everyone's participating in the same endeavor, simply to increase the love between Radha and Krishna. And as the love between Radha and Krishna increases, the love between the devotees and Radha and Krishna increases. And as the love between the devotees and Radha and Krishna increases, so the love between Radha and Krishna also increase. So it's you could say, what the only thing they produce there in Goloka Vrindavan is love. Can't sell it here. But actually, that's what sells everything here also. People's enthusiasm. Here, we take enthusiasm as a manifestation of love. The enthusiasm for something. If you're enthusiastic about something, people will buy the product often just to buy your enthusiasm. They don't care so much about the product. They simply want to get the enthusiasm. So similarly, in the spiritual world, it's not some kind of dull thing, you know, every day we've got to get up and herd these cows. Got to take them out to the forest. And then the same thing happens again. We dance with Krishna. We come back. The gopis come and greet him. We've been doing this since eternally. But actually what's different every day is the enthusiasm is always increasing. Even Srimati Rarani, she doesn't think, oh, it's the same old Krishna. She thinks, maybe I've seen Krishna once before, but it was only very briefly. And today I'll finally get a chance to see Krishna. Therefore, her enthusiasm is unlimited to see Krishna. And that enthusiasm is what, loving enthusiasm is actually what attracts Krishna. Because Srimati Radharani is unimaginably beautiful, but so are all the residents of Vrindavan. They're all unimaginably beautiful, but they're all unimaginably enthusiastic to please Krishna. And Krishna is unlimitedly enthusiastic to please them also. So that makes for a very exciting time. And of course, it's not that personal means that everything goes smoothly in Goloka Vrindavan. It would be pretty boring, although it does go smoothly. But there are rumors of demons there. Although demons aren't there, there's Keshis there, and Kali is there, but they're not demons, they're devotees. They serve Krishna. Krishna rides Kali around the Jamuna with the gopis on. They all get on Kali's back, and they ride him around the Jamuna. Similarly, they ride Keshi around Vrindavan. But then we go there, a Kurur actually comes and takes Krishna away. Even in the spiritual world. It's not that everything is predictable. The inhabitants, they don't even know about a Kurur because although he comes eternally and takes Krishna away, but the time factor is so great there that they forget about it after some time. After some trillions of lifetimes of Brahma, they forget that Krura existed and that he might come and take Krishna away again. But one day he shows up, takes Krishna away, and everyone becomes completely absorbed in meditation upon Krishna again, in separation, wondering if Krishna will ever come back again. And sure enough, after another 100 trillion billion lifetimes of Brahma, Krishna shows up again. And after some time they forget that he ever left, and then a Krura shows up again. But it's not like they're, you know, it's just nitya siddha, it's all coming back to the same place again, and we're all starting all over. But it's always increasingly more love, more excitement, more enthusiasm. It's always generating more pleasure, more varieties of pleasure are being generated. So even here in the material world, Krishna has his associates. It's not that he comes here and he thinks that this is a pretty useless place. Why should I bring any of my friends here? Get them all depressed seeing what's going on here. No, even here when Krishna comes, he's surrounded by the demigods, and each demigod, each sage, each associate has a very personal loving exchange with Krishna. Krishna is expert. He knows how to exchange exactly according to the mentality of the person he deals with. Of course, in order to be able to deal with Krishna directly, like as a demigod or as a sage in one of Krishna's forms, is not something ordinary. You can't sign up on the internet to become Krishna's servant here. One has to become very much qualified. But Krishna is able to reciprocate exactly with everyone, just like he's actually reciprocating with us now. It's not like Krishna is reciprocating with the demigods and with the sages, or he's reciprocating with the gopis in Vrindavan, or the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, and we're kind of like left out of the whole picture. But Krishna is in our heart, and right now he's reciprocating perfectly with each one of us. He does that eternally. But the point is that we have to develop a desire to try and please Krishna, and then Krishna will reciprocate by revealing himself. If we don't want to have a desire to serve Krishna, then even if Krishna revealed himself to us, it wouldn't be a very pleasant revelation. We think, why did you come here and spoil my fun? What are you doing here? When I want you, I'll call you. Krishna knows exactly what we want, and every moment he's reciprocating with us. And even when we become liberated, it's not that Krishna treats every soul the same. He reciprocates with the different varieties of desires of the souls perfectly. Even in, for instance, when Krishna married 16,108 queens in Dwarka, he reciprocated perfectly with each one of them. As a matter of fact, he had a slightly different form for each princess. Only when he left each palace and merged into one Krishna, going to the Siddharma assembly hall, then at that moment Krishna appeared in his original form. Otherwise, Krishna perfectly reciprocated with the desires of each queen. And not only that, but each queen, somehow or another, was imagining that I'm the only princess. That's called illusion, but that's called spiritual illusion. Similarly, Krishna was able to reciprocate with each cowherd boy and when he was here, and when he got tired, he put his head on the lap of each cowherd boy, and there are many cowherd boys. Therefore, we should feel a little engladdened that Krishna is so great. He can reciprocate with each one of us, even right now. All we do is have to recognize him. That's why, if you read Bhagavad Gita, on many purports, every other word is Krishna, because that's what we've forgotten. That's the whole Bhagavad Gita, is to help us remember Krishna, and that we have an eternal relationship with him. And if we try to make that relationship better, we try to enter into a relation with Krishna in the mood of service to him, then the result is that Krishna will actually reveal himself, and then we'll actually understand what life is all about. The inhabitants of Vrindavan, they know what life is about. They get up and they look forward to seeing Krishna. That's all. They don't go onto the internet, to see what movie's available. They don't try and, you know, think, well, I just really didn't get enough sleep last night. Danced with Krishna all night long. I think I need a little extra rest. Now they get up very enthusiastically to go and see Krishna and to serve Krishna and to play with Krishna or dance with Krishna or to cook for Krishna or make garlands for Krishna. But something for Krishna, that's all. So as we develop that attitude for Krishna, whatever we're doing, then Krishna will actually manifest himself for us, and then we'll see how very beautiful Krishna is. So, Kuala? Pitanya? Yes. Well, as I said the other day, enthusiasm is based on patience. If we keep in mind that we're eternal, and we should find out what we should do as eternal souls, then if we do that, then we'll develop some ability to hear. And as we develop the ability to hear the transcendental sound, transcendental philosophy, then we'll develop conviction that I am Krishna's servant, will know how to serve Krishna properly. And we serve Krishna properly, then gradually Krishna gives us intelligence, how to make progress and the platform of liberation, first of all, and eventually how to become expert on the transcendental platform of developing our enthusiasm. Or as Prabhupada writes, activities performed in Krishna consciousness with intelligence is called enthusiasm. So we patiently learn how to perform devotional service expertly with intelligence, and then our enthusiasm will manifest. Yes. Well, any Prabhupada, as it says in the Krishna book, anyone who is assisting Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission is to be considered a demigod. Whether one of us is Indra or Chandra or Agni, I don't know. I kind of doubt it. If you find someone with a whole bunch of eyes all over their body, it might give them away, but other than that, I don't know how you can figure it out. If someone flicks their hands and fire comes out, then it might be some special demigod. Other than that, I don't think we have to worry about it. Because after all, even the demigods are spiritual beings, just like we are. They're just in a body, which is particularly utilized as a demigod. But demigods are, I mean, although they're nice servants of Krishna, but we have a much more fortunate position than a demigod, being able to engage in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement with an opportunity of going back to Godhead in a length of time which is inconceivable to the demigods. The fact that otherwise, generally people go to the heavenly planets, even the sages, and they try to make progress from Indraloka to Maharaloka to Tapaloka to Siddhaloka to Brahmaloka, and then finally go back to the spiritual world if they're good devotees. And that takes usually at least, you know, some maybe 10, 20, 300 trillion years. And we can do it in just a few years. So we're in a much better position than any demigod. Although, of course, we don't have the illusion that we're moving the sun or controlling the air or the wind. But they're not controlling the air or the wind either. Krishna's controlling everything. They're just given a position where they can be experiencing what they think is themselves doing all these things. Yes?
I have a question regarding, you mentioned material universes, there are so many. So is there ever any story of those material universes? ending of yugas is ever ending, or it's all the time the same?
Well, I can't say. If you stay here long enough, maybe you'll find out. But it's not recommended, because whatever I would say, I don't think you could prove it one way or the other. But, you know, whether there's going to be a time that everyone goes back to Godhead and no one ever falls down, I think we'd better go back to the spiritual world and see it from that perspective. Anything else? Yes.
As I understand, in the absolute platform, our thoughts and desires are very basically like actions. So this relative platform, if we think of doing something, but it's not already like we did it. So
yeah, you
relative to this, and the discrimination, self-control, and self-control. But on the absolute platform, if you just for a second think of something, and it's like you did it, it's already been done. So I guess, I'm just thinking that this means, how do we know that we are not going to fall again? I mean, we can't.
Well, you might as well sit around and worry about it. You have plenty of time here to worry about it. But in any case, how do we know we're not going to fall? Well, there's no guarantee. The only thing we can say is that Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago said, according to his knowledge, and he knows everything, so far anyone who's ever gone back to the spiritual world, no one has ever fallen down. But we could be the first one. Considering that, practically speaking, the universes have been manifested practically eternally, and to make a statement that no one has fallen down since then, it's pretty good assurance. I don't think you can get better insurance than that. All right, thank you very much. Grandharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.